This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
And a wonderful Erev Shabbos to all of you. It's great again to be with you, to talk about the Parsha, to look into the Parsha, to understand and to study the Parsha. Because as I say so very often, Torah is called Torat Chaim. It is a Torah of life. It's not only a book of rules, it's not a book of stories, God forbid. It's not anything other than a guide to life in every sense of the word. It tells us how to properly fulfill our mission upon this earth. After all, a human being has a tremendous responsibility, the responsibility of becoming a partner with God Himself in creation. Because at the end of creation, He says, and this was created la'asot, to continue being made. And that, of course, refers to each and every single individual who has a unique purpose, a unique responsibility, a unique set of skills and talents, a gift that God gave him and him or her alone throughout the entire history. No one ever has this particular mission, and no one will have it. And in order to complete the overall purpose of God's creation, each and every one of us has to understand what their purpose and mission is. And we find this through Torah. By the continued study of Torah, we get insight, we get clarity. Our minds begin to develop in a way that enables us to appreciate what in fact is being asked from us. It's not an instant moment. It's not something that will come simply automatically. It comes about as a result of dedication to Torah, of faith in God, and the study of Torah. Because the study of Torah not only gives us greater knowledge, but the study of Torah expands our minds. It expands our ability to see things, to understand things, and to look at things correctly. Because after all, as we've often discussed, sight is powerful. It enables us to see. And true sight is something which is ultimately limitless. We can see beyond. We can see beyond time. We can see beyond space. There are no barriers as there are to natural sight as we understand it. And this is why, when it comes to the parasha of the week, we should study it on a daily basis, each and every single day, the particular portion that is connected with that day. And in that way, we connect with Torah, we connect with God, and we connect with ourselves, as I mentioned earlier, in order to know what it is that we have to do in order to fulfill our purpose in creation and to fulfill the purpose of creation generally. We're still very much in the month of Tammuz. And as I mentioned, when we enter Tammuz is one of these complicated months. It's one of these either-or situations. It can be a time, a situation of great opportunity and blessing, or God forbid, the opposite. Because Tammuz is one of those months which contains extreme opposites coming together. And it's as a result of our actions that we are able to somehow guide the month of Tammuz in a particular and positive way. However, unfortunately, throughout history, the people didn't act as well as they should. They behaved in a way which caused terrible, terrible tragedies to Jewish people. Historically, the exile of the people twice, the destruction of the temple twice. And in fact, this coming Thursday is the 17th of Tammuz, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, which is the onset of the 3 weeks of mourning. When we mourn the loss of both temples, the destruction of both temples, and the exile of the people, once by Babylon and then by Rome. It's important for us to understand what it means to lose the temple. It's not only a structure, it's not only a holy place. It was the center in a sense of God's creation, in which the holy tablets during the first temple rested. It was a place where the offerings were brought. It was a place that received the presence of God in all His glory. And when that was taken from us, this place, unfortunately, no longer has the presence of that dimension of God. And this is the cause of exile. Exile is when the revelation of God isn't obvious, when we don't see what we should see, we don't behave in the way that we should behave, not only are we exiled geographically, taken from our holy land, and sent to strange and dangerous places, but in fact, we don't have the clarity and purpose of God's guidance, and it takes tremendous effort in order to somehow bring that divine energy into our lives. But this is the 3 weeks of mourning, which culminates, of course, with Tisha B'Av, the saddest day of the year. But we are told that we can transform these days into days of joy, into days of glory. It's important for us to understand that our efforts can not only make us see things a bit more clearly, but we have the power to change this ultimate negativity into something which is absolutely positive. We're able to take time of tragedy and turn it into joy. You know, we often speak about consolation. A person goes through a trying, challenging time. And God forbid, there's often a sense of loss, and people have to be consoled. In fact, it's one of the commandments of Torah, that when a person is going through a situation of difficulty, we have to console that individual, bring comfort to that individual. But we are told over here is not only that we will be consoled for that which we have gone through, but we are able to transform the actual negativity and tragedy into something which is not only positive, but something which is days of joy, days of greatness. This is something which we can do. This is something which we are able to achieve through our efforts. On the 17th of Tammuz, Mishnah tells us that five terrible things happened throughout history. First was during the time of the Jews in the desert, unfortunately, when they created the golden calf and behaved in a way contrary to the will of God. Moses was in heaven. He came down with the tablets, with the holy tablets, with the Ten Commandments in his arms. And when he saw what was happening to the people and by the people, what did he do? He threw the tablets to the ground and shattered them. This great gift from God, the tablets that were made, so to speak, by God himself, inscribed by God himself, this incredible gift to the people, a physical object that was basically an extension of God himself. And Moses shatters it, and that day was the 17th of Tammuz, a day that unfortunately, later in history, repeated this type of tragedy again and again. It was during the siege of Babylon, and it was a time that the Jewish people couldn't bring the daily karbonot, the daily offerings. They were locked into the holy city. They were locked into the walls of the temple, and there were no animals that could be used for the offerings. It was a day of great tragedy because each and every single day since the temple was standing, the daily offerings were brought. But then again, today we have prayer. Prayer is in place of those offerings. And this is why through our prayer, we are able to transform to a certain degree the tremendous loss of the daily korbanot offering in the Holy Temple. Apostolos, and we're not exactly sure who he was and what era he lived in, but we are told that he burned the Torah on that day. And we wonder, which Torah did he burn? There's a view that it was the Torah that was written by Moses himself. There was a view Moses had written five Torahs, and he burned that one. There's a view that this is a Torah that was written by Ezra, the prophet Ezra, who was known as Ezra the scribe, Ezra HaSofer. He perfectly wrote up the Torah for generations, and this is a Torah that Apostolos had burned. It was a time of great tragedy, because that which was the basis of our faith, the Torah, was burned publicly. And our sages tell us that ultimately each and every single Torah has that distinction, and the destruction of any Torah wherever it happened throughout history, is as bad as what apostates did. An idol, the fourth thing is, an idol was placed in the holy temple. Can you imagine a place that reflected the presence of one God, which reflected the absolute faith in one God? It was completely violated by placing an idol in the temple. And then, of course, the Romans breached the walls of Jerusalem on this day. And by breaching the walls of Jerusalem, they were able to enter Jerusalem and ultimately enter the Holy Temple and to destroy that as well. And in the Jerusalem Talmud, we're told that not only the Romans in 69, the Common Era, but even the Babylonians during the first temple, the Romans destroyed the second temple, but even in Babylon during the first temple, we were able to unfortunately see how the temple was destroyed because Jerusalem was breached. And these things come together to remind us that something very terrible had happened on this day, but it's our duty to look beyond the tragedy and to recognize the blessing that is within, to recognize that which in fact is the ultimate purpose of our being. When the temple was, when Moses broke the tablets, what does God say? Thank you for breaking them. A strange thing to say. But nonetheless, when he was given the second set of tablets, that was not, the stones were not cut by God, they were inscribed by God. One says it wasn't as great as the first. No, but our sages tell us it was greater than the first set. Because with the first set, not the entire Torah was revealed to us. The Midrashot, other aspects of Torah were not given to us during the giving of the first set of tablets. But with the second set, the entire Torah was revealed. So we see that even within a situation of terrible tragedy, if we look deeply, there is the promise of blessing. And this is something that we have to understand. This is something that we have to understand in the fullest sense of the word. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about the 17th of Tammuz, a time of terrible tragedy, a time that terrible things happened to the Jewish people, but with our effort, we are able to transform every one of those tragedies into something with its joy. And this connects us with the Parsha of the week. The Parsha of the week is actually a double Parsha, the Parsha of Chukas and the Parsha of Balak. And each one represents the same idea of recognizing something that is able to change the negative reality into something which is positive. Chukas, of course, begins with the famous law of the red heifer. The red heifer, the ashes of which were mixed with water and other things, and if a person became ritually or spiritually defiled, this sprinkling of water would actually transform the individual from a state of impurity into a state of purity and ultimately holiness. What was the red heifer all about? It's one of those commandments that we don't understand at all. Even King Solomon. King Solomon, who understood the entire Torah, the wisest of all men, and the Midrash tells us in certain things he knew more than even Moses. Solomon, they say, sages tell us, had the intelligence of the combined intelligence of all the Jewish people throughout history. Can you imagine the wisdom, the intelligence, the power of Solomon's understanding? And yet, when it came to the story of the red heifer, he said, I cannot understand the reason behind this particular commandment. And therefore, the commandment of the red heifer symbolizes something which is beyond reason, something which is beyond human understanding, even the human understanding of someone like King Solomon. There are many things that we do understand. There are many things that were given to us that we have to use our intelligence in order to recognize, in order to understand. certain things, no matter how hard we try, we can't understand, because the human mind cannot comprehend certain things. And this is important for us to understand. Again, as I mentioned often, we are creatures of intelligence. We are creatures of intelligence, and that distinguishes us from all the other creatures within creation, from the inanimate to the world of vegetation to the world of the animal kingdom. The human being has intelligence, and yet we're told that human intelligence, as great as it is, and it is indeed great, the human mind is able to fathom tremendous things. There are some things that we simply cannot. And this brings about a state of humility. This brings about a state of recognition that ultimately these laws come from God. And it comes to teach us that even those laws that we do understand, whether it's common ordinances, common laws, or testimony, whatever it is, ultimately we observe them because God told us to observe them, despite the fact that we understand it. We do it not because necessarily we understand it, but because God told us this is what you have to do. And this is so much part of our faith, the combination of the rational and the super-rational, that which can be understood and that which cannot be understood. And they come together in the hearts and minds of people, people who can and will understand things, people who can and will come to a greater understanding, but at the same time know the limitations of that intelligence as well. And even though we don't understand the reason behind this mitzvah of the red heifer, there are all sorts of symbolic dimensions. The Medrash tells us one which is quite beautiful. It gives us an example, an allegory, of a servant in the house of the king. And the child, the infant of the service of the servant, messes up in the palace, on the beautiful floors of the palace of the king. What happens? They send for the mother to come and clean the mess that this infant made. What is the infant? The infant in this situation is the golden calf. It wasn't a full-grown animal. It was only an infant. It was a calf. And it created a huge mess in the palace of God himself. What happened was terrible, terrible punishment. What happened was, as mentioned earlier on, the shattering of the tablets of the Ten Commandments. What happened was that so many people died. It was a moment of terrible tragedy. It was indeed a mess. So we call upon the mother, so to speak, which is the red heifer, the female cow, to come and clean up the mess. As mentioned earlier on, its ultimate purpose is to bring about a state of purity into an individual who's gone through ritual, spiritual defilement. And the ultimate defilement, of course, is the sin of the golden calf. And therefore, it's the red heifer that brings about the total purification of this terrible sin. The parsha also contains the very strange story of after the death of Miriam, the water, the miraculous well that traveled with the people throughout the wilderness came to an end. In her merit, we had water. When she passed away, as we read toward the end of the parsha, the first parsha, this water, well, it was no longer there. Her presence wasn't there, and therefore the merit wasn't there. And the people began to clamor and complain. And God said, go to this rock and speak to the rock, and water will flow enough for the people, all their needs. So Moshe came to this rock, but suddenly Satan had moved the rock and exchanged it for another. And he spoke to the rock, but no water came. So what does Moshe do? He takes his stick, he takes his staff, and hits a rock. And by hitting the rock, water began to flow. And what happens immediately thereafter? God says, Moshe and Aaron, because you did not sanctify my name. There was a lack in your faith. There was a lack in your belief. You will not enter the promised land. A terrible punishment, can you imagine? The most pious and righteous and decent of people, Moses and Aaron, they defiled, they didn't listen to God, they didn't have the necessary faith, and they were punished so severely by not being permitted to come in to the Holy Land. What's that all about? How can you possibly explain? Yan asher lo haemantem bi, because you did not have emunah, faith in me. Moshe was lacking in faith, God forbid. Aaron was lacking in faith, God forbid. However, the Sforno tells us something which is very, very interesting, one of the great commentaries, Sforno. He says there are three types of miracles. There's a miracle that takes place within the realm of the natural order. There's a miracle that defies, to a certain degree, the natural order. And then there is a miracle which is so divine that it absolutely rejects every dimension of the natural order. The ultimate miracle that is not clothed within the natural and is not, in a sense, limited. It is completely beyond the natural order. And this miracle of talking to the stone would have been that category, a miracle which was totally beyond any type of natural explanation. You talk to a stone and it gives water. Wow, that is an ultimate miracle. And God says to Moses, because you did not perform the ultimate miracle, you performed a miracle. You hit the rock and water came out. That's a great miracle. And it happened previously. Moshe was told to hit a rock. But this time he was told to speak to a rock. And God says to Moshe, because you did not bring about the ultimate miracle, you have caused a weakening of faith in the people themselves. Yan lo haemantem, says the Sforno, is because you did not do something that would have created a tremendous, tremendous level of faith in God. Question is, Moses, he knew that. Why then did he hit the rock? He knew that he would be doing a miracle that wasn't of the highest degree. It would be only of the second degree of miracles. Why did he do it, knowing that this is not something that God wanted? And he knew that it would not bring about the total and complete dimension of faith within the people. And one of the answers is, because Moshe was a leader, the ultimate leader. And as I often speak about Moshe, his first and foremost concern was to care for his people, to protect his people, and to ensure that his people survived with the necessary dignity and strength that they should. He was afraid, Moshe was afraid, that if he would spend too much time trying to find the rock and speak to it, the Jewish people would start rebelling, not only complaining as they did for water, but actually rebel. And he knew that if they rebelled, God would punish them in the most severe way. Because God said, I've had enough of these complaints, of these difficulties, of people who are never satisfied. God would have punished them. And in order to calm the people instantly and immediately, he put himself at risk. He hit the rock. He didn't speak to the rock, knowing full well that this is something which, in a sense, was not God's instruction. But at the same time, his concern was to protect his people and to ensure that they were not punished, God forbid. And this overrode his act. He didn't speak because that would take too much time. He hit the rock. And because of that, he was punished together with Aaron severely. Because righteous people, when they do something which is, in a sense, negative, unfortunately, they're punished at the highest level. You cannot enter the land. Although we are told elsewhere that, in a sense, not going into the land was again a blessing from God, because he, as leader, had to remain behind in the desert where the entire generation of people had passed on. And as a leader, even after death, you continue to lead. And he was there to protect these souls and to ensure that when the right moment came at the coming of Mashiach, he would lead them into the Holy Land. The second of which this parsha, of course, is Bilam. The story of, well, Balak is the name of the parsha, but it seems the central character is Bilam. Bilam, the false prophet, who was hired by Balak to curse the Jewish people. Now, we mustn't take this lightly. Bilam was an exceptionally powerful person, and his curses had an effect. They did great damage. In fact, our sages tell us, it says that never again was there a prophet as great as Moses. And our sages say among the Jews, there was never again a prophet as great as Moses. But among the non-Jews there was. And who was it? That was Bilam. Bilam had this connection with spirituality that was incredibly powerful. Of course, as we know, God's creation, for every positive, there's a negative. And Bilam represented the negative spiritual power. And this is why his curses, God forbid, would create huge damage. But we know the story. Because every single curse that he wanted to say was transformed into the most magnificent blessings, into the most magnificent blessings that speak about the greatness and glory of the Jewish people. In fact, Matovo is something which became part of our daily prayer. He looked at the Jewish people and he saw their modesty, he saw their holiness, he saw their purpose. He wanted to curse them, he wanted to destroy them, he wanted to bring an end to this people. But as he opened his mouth, instead of what he intended to say, was transformed and came out as a blessing. In fact, the reference to Mashiach and Torah comes from none other than Bilam. Can you believe that? The great hope, the ultimate purpose of God's creation, the coming of Mashiach, is something which Bilam speaks about, no one else. And yet, we know what his real intention was. But there was total transformation. Total transformation in the sense that what he wanted to say, he couldn't say. And from what he did say, you see how severe his curse would have been. What is that really all about? That shows something which is higher than nature. In nature, Bilam had the right and the privilege to do what he had to do. This is the mission that God gave him. But we had to have choice, and therefore there's the good and there's the evil. There is the right, there's the wrong, there is the positive, there's the negative, there is the constructive, and there's destructive. But he had the power of destruction, and that was, in a sense, his duty. But it was transformed. It's something which defies reason, even divine reason. God, who created these two elements, says there's something higher than reason. Something higher than reason. A miracle which is beyond. And this is how the words of Bilam are transformed. And this connects the two parshas. The first parsha of Chukah speaks about that which is super-rational. That we see certain laws that are simply beyond the realm of human intelligence. And this is something which tells us what the foundation of our faith is. Our foundation in our faith is faith and trust in God on an absolute level, not on a rational level, not on a level of reason, although there are many things that we do understand. Similarly with Bilam. Bilam tries to do whatever he can and has the right to do whatever he can. And God says, go with these people, do what you have to do. But something far, far superior than the right of Bilam, which in a sense is irrational because we understand the necessity, because of choice, the necessity of the presence of positive and negative. This is overridden by God. And instead of cursing, he blesses. This is what connects these two parshas, which from time to time are in fact connected. The end of the parsha is the story of Pinchas, who was outraged at the behavior of the head of the tribe of Shimon, who was unfortunately doing something completely immoral in front of all the people. And he was a zealot. He was a zealot who said, this cannot be, this must come to an immediate end. This too is something which is super rational, being a zealot. Because according to the law, when he came running to Moshe, and he said, Moshe, isn't this the law? Our sages tell us, it's one of those laws that is written in the book, but we don't act on it. Because it can be extremely negative if used incorrectly, the zealot. However, Pinchas was motivated by absolute purity and faith in God. And because of that, he reached the highest level, became a Kohen. That is the discussion of next week's parsha. But that too indicates his behavior, something which is beyond reason, something which is beyond rational. This is the essence of these two parshiot coming together. Understanding that super-rational elements, ultimate miracles, come together to bring about a strength that we actually possess, that each and every one of us within our own reality possesses this incredible power of reaching out to that which is far beyond reason and bringing it down into this physical world in order to make a positive change. That is how powerful each and every one of us is. We are actually powerful to the degree that we can, and therefore we should, we must exercise that incredible privilege of doing something which is great, far beyond our normal abilities, far beyond anything, the ability to change reality from negative into positive, from tragedy into joy. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about the whole idea of that which is beyond our understanding, beyond our ability to understand. But yet, we live in a physical world, and in a physical world, we have to function with the physical qualities that God gave us. Yes, the essence of our faith is that which is beyond reason. However, there is something which is greater, and there's something which is deeper, strangely enough, and that's fulfilling the law as we should and as we could. The question is how? Based upon a foundation of absolute loyalty and faith, there are laws that we could understand and therefore should understand through the study of Torah, which brings us to the incredible Haftarah that we read this Shabbat. Now, we could read one of two, but our sages have chosen the Haftarah that is normally read with the second parsha of Balak as the Haftarah that we read. Of course, the obvious reason is because it comes from the prophet Micah, who mentions the story of Balak and Bilam in the Haftarah, of what Bilam advised Balak to do, how to ultimately destroy the Jewish people, as we read at the end of the parsha, that there was a weakening of our strength because we began to behave in a way that was contrary to the will of God. Micah, a great prophet, he lived during the time of Isaiah. Isaiah and Micah lived in a time where the people were quite comfortable. It was about 100 years before the destruction of the first temple. The people were wealthy. The people enjoyed a very comfortable material life. In a sense, life was good. Isaiah and Micah prophesied to the people, be aware that God is not pleased with your behavior. despite the fact that you bring offerings to the temple, it's not done with a sense of devotion and loyalty. It's because of reasons and arrogance and self-interest and self-promotion. Whatever the case is, they were pleading with the people that down the line, this will be taken away. The Jewish people weren't interested. They had the temple. They lived a good physical life. What should they care? These prophets, what are they talking about? Talking about destruction? Destruction of the temple? The exile of the people? What are you talking about? Impossible. We live a very comfortable life, spiritually, fooling themselves. But certainly materially, they live very comfortable. Micah and Isaiah speak to the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah, where the temple was standing. But they saw clearly what was happening. They saw a deterioration in the quality of Jewish life. They saw, unfortunately, a situation that, God forbid, might result in destruction, destruction of the holy temple, exile of the people, unthinkable. But this is what they saw, and this is what they tried to impress upon the people. But the Haftarah begins with great, great distant future, far beyond destruction, that the remnants of the people after exile will be so strong that the nations of the world will be petrified of them. It will be like a lion walking around in the forest, mighty, powerful, unafraid of anything else. Micah describes a great and glorious time when a handful of Jewish people, compared to what they should have been, will in fact enjoy incredible, incredible blessing, safety and greatness, prelude coming to Mashiach. Strange. Strange that we talk about this in our day and age, where, well, most people live comfortably. Even those that have perhaps financial difficulties or other difficulties, compared to the lifestyle the Jewish people had, well, in Eastern Europe and other parts of the world, we live in a very comfortable life. And we say to ourselves, all is good. What are we missing? We miss nothing. Everything is wonderful. Everything is great. Everything is there in the fullest sense of the word. We are in a good state. But the inner prophet is telling us, are we in fact as good as we should be? And this is why after Micah talks about the great and glorious future, he admonishes the people. He tells them precisely that your current behavior is unacceptable. And if it continues, will result in terrible destruction. But he ends off. And he ends off with something which is one of the most famous statements in the entire Tanakh, in the entire Torah. He rhetorically asks, what is good? And what does God want from you? And he mentions three things. The first thing is, do justice. The second thing he says is, love, loving kindness. And the third thing is the famous words, Hatzne Leches, Hashem, walk humbly with God. What do these three things actually mean? Why does he end this great prophecy with these powerful terms? He's telling us something very important. Justice, correctness, what God wants in this world. So many people actually believe in it, but don't have the strength, the courage to bring it into full practice. Whether it's a layman or a judge, whether it's a person who is simply fulfilling the law or a person who has to impose law, very often bias, self-interest overrides this great notion that we believe in justice. And we do believe in justice. He doesn't say believe in justice. He says do justice. Make it happen. In this physical world, bring about correctness. Don't overlook negativity all the time. Yes, you can justify and rationalize and be gentle. But justice must prevail. This is the law of God's creation. This is the law of Torah. Don't believe in justice. Do justice. The second thing he says quite beautifully, the second thing he says is love, loving kindness. Now, all sorts of people love kindness, well, do acts of kindness. But he doesn't say do kindness. He says love, loving kindness. Develop that inner feeling within yourself where you actually love kindness. That takes effort. And the third thing he says, walk humbly with God. Walk humbly with God. Know that God is always there, greater than you. No matter what you achieve, no matter what you know, no matter who and what you are, walk humbly, because humility brings about greatness. This is something that we should take to heart. This is something how we can, in fact, create a much better world. Tomorrow, interesting, in the world of Chabad, is Yud Beis Tammuz, the day that the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1927 was released from communist prison, where he was brought under false charges, unfortunately, by Jewish people themselves. And yesterday, after weeks and weeks of being in a situation of great difficulty, he was finally released, which tells us that even in Tammuz, we can have days of joy, days of celebration, days of freedom, and days of true liberation, which is a symbol of how we must view the month of Tammuz and the 3 weeks that are coming. In shul tomorrow, listen to the parsha, listen to the Haftorah. You will hear something, it will resonate, and you will act on it. Good Shabbos.